Okay, hello everyone to my video podcast and stream on the future of business and technology. And today's topic is artificial intelligence and the future of cybersecurity. Such an important topic. We will look at the impact that AI has on cybersecurity and explore cybersecurity trends and talk about how businesses can really navigate these modern threats. And to help me do this, I'm joined today by Kieran Holyoam, who is the Vice President of AI Cybersecurity for UK, Ireland and Emerging Markets at BlackBerry. Welcome, Kieran.
Thanks, Ben. Great to be here. Thanks for having us on.
Where are you joining us from today?
I'm on the south coast of the UK, so about 60 miles outside of London. So great to be on the show.
Very good. And yeah, maybe you can give us a super brief overview of BlackBerry, because I remember BlackBerry from my handsets and I think the company has moved on. So maybe you can give us a very brief overview of what BlackBerry is today and what you do for them.
Well, I'll answer the first two questions probably that are on everyone's mind. Yes, we're still going. BlackBerry's still around as an organization. And secondly, what is it we do now? So we work exclusively from the cybersecurity business unit that I sit in, hence the name, in the cybersecurity market. So we're fondly remembered, quite rightly, for the handset days, where we had significant market share in our hardware. All of the good stuff and all of the security and the trust that was built up during that handset days persists in what BlackBerry does today. So we are a big player in the cybersecurity market. So all of the security and trust and the features that you had on your phone back in the day, which were BlackBerry phones, is now available across the market in all sorts of different handsets. But we built the business into more than that. So we are now at the forefront of the AI, cybersecurity AI, and the use of AI to defend organizations against nefarious actors in this world. So BlackBerry has sort of transformed from a hardware company where we had phones with keyboards that we all loved into now a pure play cybersecurity business, protecting people's endpoints with the latest most advanced generative and predictive AI tool on the planet. That's awesome.
Fantastic. That's good. So how is BlackBerry seeing threat actors to use AI then to attack organizations?
Yeah, really good question. I think really timely. I think it's the NCSC, the UK National Cybersecurity Centre, basically said that every attack pretty much that we look at from threat actors is using some sort of AI. Now, whether that's AI in itself as to go and propagate the attack, or using AI to generate the code to do the attack. Now with that's what we're seeing. So the challenge we have, and the sort of challenge statement we have for organizations, is if you're not using AI to defend yourself, you are not going to be successful. Okay, so the threat from AI is ever present, and it's only going to get worse as we go down the road of sort of polymorphic, self-healing, self-determining AI in cybersecurity. Then you are going to need some significant defenses that and allow you to attack those AI based threats with an AI based cybersecurity posture.
Yeah, and it feels like you've got this arms race going on at the moment. On the one hand side, you have criminals trying to use AI to land more sophisticated attacks. On the other hand, we're using AI to help us defend. So how does the AI used to attack differ from the AI used in defense?
Yeah, I get that's a really, really good question. I think I'll talk it from how we defend. First of all, I think that's kind of really important. So we have over many years, I mean, we're on our sort of seventh or eighth generation of AI model that we use to determine, and fundamentally, if you strip it back to the basics, it is about determining whether something is good or something is bad. And they're the sort of the outcomes that you're wanting to achieve. Our model is you know, probably 10 years old now, maybe a bit older, and that has been that model, maths model, has been taught over many generations about different characteristics of what a threat looks like. So we're able to take that model and apply that to today's AI. Now, if you think about AI, we're at that inflection point, I guess, of what AI means. In recent years, it's probably been the domain of, you know, large companies with loads of money to spend on, you know, development and so on and so forth, your Googles of the world, etc. But as we see the consumerization and the ability to access AI and the models that go into it, well, now that changes the game somewhat. However, the models are only as good as the learning that they've done previously, right? So when we look at our model, for example, we are able to take, we call it temporal advantage, which is a very, weird way of saying we're able to predict the future. So we can take our model that we had from, I don't know, 2015, apply it to today's, or in the listener's terms, something like WannaCry that came out in sort of 2018, 2019, our 2015 model of our protection was able to stop WannaCry executing. We've developed that model in 2015. WannaCry wasn't even written, thought about, but in 2018, we would have been able to stop it with our 2015 model. I guess what I'm trying to say is that not all AI is equal. And the learning that goes on in those models, AI models, is critically important in the way that they're able to defend, but also attack. So the sophistication of the attacks is probably going to be determined by the learnings of those models and what they're able to go and do. As long as we're able to stay ahead and continue to build and evolve out, you know, the AI defensive models, we should be okay. We should be in a really good place, and that's certainly what we're seeing from the BlackBerry Cylance AI, is that we're able to stay ahead of the game. Who knows what's going to happen in the future with quantum computing and all that sort of stuff? But right now, we're able to defend, really well against some of the current attacks.
So, in layman's terms, then what the AI does is it basically monitors the behavior, the activities that any IT and digital activities in the organization, and if then detect something that doesn't look like the normal patterns and might look like something where someone is trying to steal data or launching a ransomware attack or something similar, that it will then stop that.
100%. Yeah. So we look at the characters. So files, for example, we'll look at, I don't know, 10, 20 million different characteristics of that file to determine, is it good or is it bad? And that's the determination we need. And then we give it a score, and that score tells us whether we should convict it and say that it's bad, or, you know, it's a benign file, or it poses no threat. But that model has been built up over, you know, billions and billions and billions of samples over many, many years. And it gives us the advantage to be able to really look at the characteristics of a file or an event and say with pretty good accuracy. Right now, we have zero false positives on total virus. So we're able to really convict these files quickly and with a high level of confidence that they are a bad thing, and we shouldn't be executing them.
So on the attack side, so we talked about the defense side. How do you see that evolving? Because especially with the way AI is developing and the pace at which it is developing, what is it you're seeing there? How are these attacks becoming more sophisticated using AI?
they just are. I know that sounds like a funny thing to say. I think, you know, applying AI, if you think about the way that you know, threats were produced, they were sort of done in an old style sort of factory where you would build some software, you would test it, you would send it out to individuals, and it would either work or not. You would then, you know, more organizations, you would then change the coding in that to make it more effective, and this process would take, you know, maybe months if not years. And I think that level of sophistication is kind of with AI, when you apply AI to that, the ability to do that learning is accelerated beyond belief. So what used to take months and years is now taking probably days, if not weeks. And so you're able to get the model, send it out, and then use AI tools to redo that recoding, as opposed to simply having to do it from a human manual perspective. You're able to apply AI techniques and tools to go and, you know, make that more that malware more effective, that ransomware more effective. And I think that whilst the sophistication may not necessarily change, the tools, techniques, and processes may not have changed, and we're not seeing them, that they have massively changed. It's the speed at which you're able to deploy malware, ransomware into the market that has, and it's that speed of iteration that is the danger to organizations. So the faster you're able to iterate a piece of malware into an organization, the more chance it has of not being able to be caught by the defensive cybersecurity tools that you have. And that's the biggest change I think we're seeing at the moment.
Okay. So what can organizations do, or what should they do to protect themselves? Have you got any top tips, any top priorities for anyone listening?
I think, don't bury your head in the sand. AI is here. It is here today, and it will persist in the future for sure. I think when you're looking at how you decide what your defensive posture looks like as an organization or as an individual. So we talk a lot about organizations, but you can take steps as an individual to protect yourself as well. And the steps you take as an individual may be smaller, it still applies to the same thing. So I think the three things for me is understand what AI is, okay? And I think we as an IT industry do a really bad job of explaining what we do as an organization, and cybersecurity is probably even worse when I look at it. So what do we mean by AI? You know, because not all AI is the same. So we have from a BlackBerry Cylance perspective, we have two types of AI that we work on. We have a predictive AI model that automatically stops and defends organizations based on the predictive characteristics, or sorry, the characteristics of that piece of software or file that we've seen. So we're able to automatically do it, no human interaction at all. So that's the predictive AI. Now that differs to your generative AI, which is what the public are mostly seeing. So the generative AI is your ChatGPT, for example. You know, that is a massive knowledge base of lots of information, lots of data that you can ask a question and you get a response back. Now we as BlackBerry don't believe you can be successful in defending against the AI attacks by just using generative AI. Now, generative AI is fantastic. It plays a really important role in cybersecurity, because it enables the analysts to react and do things quicker and maybe in a better way, in a more sort of more sort of defined structure. And the generative AI helps them get to the solutions quicker. But if you're not preventing the actual, you know, the majority of events occurring, you are going to be deluged by the amount of AI attacks that are coming through. So I think understanding of your current security posture, what that looks like from an AI perspective, and how you're going to put measures in place to defend against those AI attacks, which aren't necessarily more sophisticated per se, but they are going to be more persistent, more frequent, and probably more effective than you've ever seen before. The second stage for me is really around education, making sure that your teams and your employees and individuals as a whole really kind of understand and make those deliberate interactions with the tools and links they click, etc. Mm-hmm. So they are informed about, you know, they're putting the business at risk if we click on that link. You know, really, you know, build up some of the cybersecurity skill sets around your people. I think, you know, make them aware, and that's going to help in two ways. It's going to help your organization, but it's also going to help them at home and be more cyber aware at home. And thirdly, I think probably not a case of if, but when. You will be cyber breached at some point. You will have a cyber attack that persists at some point. That is the nature of the world that we are now entering. You know, this is now a threat that is persistent, and you need to have a plan. So my third pillar really is plan for what happens in the event of. Now, we talk to organizations a lot. You know, a lot of our business is built around incident response and providing world-class incident response to organizations that have been affected by a breach. And the first thing, I think there's a phrase, isn't there? No plan survives first contact. Well, that applies here. You know, some of the organizations we talk to where they've had a cyber breach have a fantastic plan. You know, it's great on paper, and they work through it. The first thing that goes is their ability to communicate. And they can't communicate because they were relying on that plan being executed through a communications tool that is now now not available. Mm. So having the ability to put a plan in place that's fully tested, and everyone is aware of what that plan entails in the event of a breach is really, really important.
Yeah, they're really good tips, and I endorse all of them. This is exactly what I'm seeing. I think understanding the new threat landscape and what AI can and can't do is super important. Education is probably the number one thing that will help you protect your organization, so people are aware of those cyber threats and they don't click on phishing emails and other links they're getting. And I agree, in terms of being prepared, I think is super important. I talk about cyber resilience, being able to actually, once you will be attacked or data will be stolen or something will be breached, how are you ready for this, and how are you going to deal with this? So really good tips. Yeah. So how does AI work in cybersecurity defense, and is there a ramp up time as it learns?
Yeah, there is. There is a ramp up time. I think I talked earlier about the generational effect of models and math models, really sophisticated math models, way above my pay grade. But we spend a lot of time training our models on you know, everything. So not just bad samples, by the way, because we need to be able to recognize good samples as well. So good and bad. And that is a process that takes time. So is there a ramp up to being able to defend yourselves? Well, yes, there is. But the good news is we've already done that work. We now have the longest continuously running AI cybersecurity defensive model on the market, right? So BlackBerry Cylance endpoint product it's been around for a very long time. We've done a lot of training, billions and billions and billions of samples that have been able to train this model to get it to a point whereby, you know, we can convict malicious activity really, really quickly with really low impact to the organization. That has taken us 10 years, you know, to get to a point where we have, you know, a very effective technology that provides really sophisticated outcomes to our customers. The ramp up time for organizations is to really look at their, I think you touched on it, what is their security posture right now? You know, do that audit of where you're at. And my advice would be make decisions, you know, quickly, because if you're still relying on sort of signature based legacy technology, whereby you're having to do updates on a daily or weekly, whatever basis, you are not going to be able to defend yourself against the latest threats that we're seeing coming through. So, you know, do for organizations, it's do that work, understand your security posture, and then, you know, come and talk to organizations like BlackBerry about what we're doing from an AI perspective. We don't expect organizations, but it's the same in you know, the software world. Organizations, our role with those organizations is to make them successful in what they do. They chances are they're not a cybersecurity vendor, so they're not interested in generating and creating sophisticated cybersecurity software. They want to go and sell widgets, or they want to go and sell beer, or they want to go and sell whatever, cars, whatever it may be. Our job is to help them be successful. So we've done the hard work. You know, we've spent a long time in this market generating AI that is going to help them defend. The good news is that we still have that predictive advantage. We still have an advantage over the attackers who, in the mainstream, probably excluding nation state stuff, but in the mainstream, they're still lagging behind. You know, they're still early in that creative cycle around what AI is. So as long as we continue to train and evolve our model, we should be able to continue to stay ahead. Organizations really need to embrace AI from a cybersecurity perspective and make it part of their vernacular in the C-suite. Mm-hmm.
So whenever we talk about the risks around AI, there's a calling for better regulation and safety guardrails that we need to put in place. From your perspective, then, do we need different regulation? Do we need regulation in this space? And if so, how do we tackle this? Can we tackle it?
I'll be honest with you, Bernard. I kind of flip flop on this one because it's a really, really tough question to answer. You know, is regulation really going to stop a nation state creating AI? It isn't, right? And I think we also are at a stage where AI is really innovative, and you know, we need to explore the benefits of what, for the context, we're talking about cybersecurity AI today, but AI is more plural than that. There are so much more capabilities AI has. You know, the ability to train surgeons, the ability to drive cars, the ability to do all sorts of different things that could have a really positive outcome and effect on humanity and the planet as a whole. Okay. When we talk about cybersecurity, yeah, cool. Regulation would be great. Yeah, lock everything down. Don't let anyone use any AI apart from, you know, defending. That's not the real world we live in. So I think there's a real balance to be struck between AI being regulated and AI being free to innovate and evolve. What I do know is that trying to get a global consensus on what AI regulation looks like is probably the only way that regulation would work, because each individual company or country is going to regulate maybe in a slightly different way, and AI is moving so quickly that my fear, you kind of need an AI from a regulation software format to regulate the regulations, if that makes sense. It's kind of, because that's the evolution, it's moving so quickly. So I think I see a need for regulation. I see a need for a global view on what that regulation should be and its implementation. But I also think we've got to be really careful about regulating something that is still relatively in its infancy, that could have you know really positive effects on the planet and as humanity as a whole.
Very good. I agree. I think especially with open source models out there, the cat is out of the bag. People will be using these for criminal and other purposes, and regulation won't protect us from that. The UK government recently published a report that identifies ransomware attacks as the number one cybersecurity threat, especially given its potential to bring big infrastructure and the whole country to a standstill. What's your perspective on this, and what can both governments and individuals and individual organizations do to raise their defenses against ransomware attacks?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think ransomware is, I think maybe 10 years ago when you talked to cybersecurity folks, they were seen as part of the problem of, you know, we always lock things down. We can't access the things we want. As users, this is, we can't access the things we want. And companies were very resistant to security being a sort of mandated across the organizations, maybe 20 years ago. But today it's a board issue. It is probably, number three or four on the agenda, if not number one on some organizations. And ransomware is a significant part of that. We see organizations on a daily basis being ransomware in one way, shape, or form or the other. And it causes significant impact on their business. And some have been lucky to survive, and some haven't survived because of the impact of the cost of being able to restore or reputational damage or whatever. So I think ransomware is first and foremost a massive threat to national critical infrastructure, mm-hmm. to organizations, to hospitals, to our way of life as a whole. And I think a coordinated ransomware attack could be devastating for a nation state, because if you start attacking utilities and hospitals and road infrastructure, everything is automated or digital or digitized these days. So chances are there's going to be some sort of PC or something that's going to be affected by ransomware. If you can coordinate that, it could be devastating. So I agree. I think we've talked a lot about AI and the applications into all organizations, and all organizations, small and large, should be looking at the deployment of AI. And I think that is really the thing that we need to do is increase the posture, security posture of the UK specifically, but as organizations and individuals, we can do a better job ourselves of making sure we're more secure. And that as a whole has a collective effect of making the country more secure. I also see it's in the legacy market. So we have a lot of legacy sort of infrastructure. So if you look at manufacturing, for example, you buy a manufacturing production line and you want to run that for 20 years or 30 years or whatever the number is. So there's a lot of legacy technologies that persist in the market. Now, they might be off network, which means they have no access to the internet, and that's fine. But we're seeing more and more those organizations with those sort of air gapped or off network sort of appliances and PCs and control units, whatever it may be, somehow starting to get some connections, because that's just by the very nature of the direction of travel the industry is going in. So when you add in sort of in the manufacturing world, there's still a lot of sort of Windows XP, right? There's a huge amount of Windows XP out there, no longer supported by Microsoft, no longer supported by all of them, pretty much the major vendors, but it's still running some large manufacturing plants, for example. Utilities have a legacy environment that they need to bring up to the modern standard, but they still need protecting in the short term. Where AI comes into this is we can apply that AI model and backward date it to go and support those legacy environments. So I think from a BlackBe perspective, we can support your legacy OT environments, your manufacturing environments where there's no connectivity, by the way, with the same efficacy, because we're not relying on any cloud connectivity to do any convictions. What we're able to do is simply look at a file and yes or no, convict or allow, So we have the same efficacy whether we're connected to the cloud or whether we're not connected to the cloud. So in those offline environments, we are extremely effective. And then, of course, we have the ability to apply our AI models across the organizations as a whole. So I think we've got sort of four pillars we work to really. We secure your communications, we secure the data, we secure the devices, and we secure people. And when we look at the outcomes that BlackBerry provides, I think that's the key takeaway that people should look at. The securing the communications, securing the data, and securing the devices, and then ultimately securing the people.
Very good. The other new threat vector comes from generative AI. So Jen Easterly, the director of the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, warned about the amplification of cybersecurity risks by generative AI. And it will make things easier. There's a potential to flood the country, the world, with fake content, with completely new phishing, much more sophisticated phishing emails, and so on. So how do you see that evolving, and how do you see this intersection between generative AI and cybersecurity evolving over the coming years?
That is a really good question. The deepfake stuff, in a world where, as in this year, I think this is the 2024, I think this is the year that in human history the most people are voting in elections ever. And the point around flooding the deepfake videos or voicemails or whatever it is out there is a real concern. It's something I do worry about a lot. I think trying to prove the authenticity of some of these things is really tough. I mean, we consume now as individuals, maybe not everyone, I'm not saying everyone does, but most people will pick up their phones and we consume content in a different way than we have done in the past 20 years. 20 years ago we were looking at newspapers, and it was a real thing when they went from the sort of big fold to the smaller sort of tablet size newspapers. Now we consume so much information on a daily basis that proving the authenticity or the provenance of it is really difficult, and it is going to cause problems. And I think the AI can help with that, but it's also part of the problem. And it goes back to the regulation we talked about earlier. AI can help identify and look at those files and those deepfake videos and determine whether they're real or not based on the attributes, but I think it's going to be really, really difficult for someone to really understand whether they're looking at something real or something fake. And I think that's where I would seek some sort of regulation. I talked about I'm on the fence, I'm sort of flip flop on regulation. I think if something is posted on one of the social media sites, there should be something, some sort of certification process that goes through that says this is an authentic video, for example. Mm-hmm. I think in the US, if the candidates in the presidential election put an advert out, they have to look in the camera and say, I'm XYZ president nomination, and I approve this ad. We need something like that for videos that go on, or deepfake, well, not deepfake, but for content, should I say, that goes onto the internet, because it is really tough to work out what's real and what's not.
It is balance very hard. I agree.
And you've got to balance that with free speech. And I think that's really important. That there are viewpoints. But then there's also the subversive nature of the deepfakes that sit out there.
Yeah, I agree. For me, there's two things we need to do. We need to build much more critical thinking skills in across the whole world, so people are more aware that this technology exists and they're probably questioning where information is coming from and become a bit more critical and suspicious. And then we need exactly as you say, these big platforms have a responsibility to pick out fake content, but that is, again, it's another race where we have more sophisticated capabilities. Things like watermarks can be, you can avoid them as well. So especially with open source technology, there's a challenge there.
It's a really tough, content is a really, really tough thing to battle. And I think, I do sympathize with some of the platforms. I genuinely do. I think, you know, the sheer amount of content that's being produced on a daily basis is potentially overwhelming, right? So I think it's going to be a real battle of over the next few years. I think that one's going to become really more and more important. I think we probably saw it in, you know, 2015, during the Brexit in the UK. There was some stuff that happened there, and I think it was well documented. But I think we've moved on now to a much more sophisticated ability to propagate information that may or may not be true, and it's a really tough battle. I like your bit about education and critical thinking. You know, the ability to analyze something and decide whether it's real or not is really important. I mean, and I talk a lot about education from a cybersecurity perspective. You know, what can we do better? Well, we need to get more people thinking that cybersecurity is a career for them, and it's an exciting career that is rewarding and, you know, happens to pay well, but it can be exciting and it can be rewarding, and you are providing some true social value to you know, your communities that you work in by working in cybersecurity. But we don't have enough people. There's a massive gap, as you know, Bernard, in cybersecurity. There's a massive skills gap that is only going to get worse.
Absolutely. Like in so many other technology fields. When you look at cybersecurity, it's very easy to have your blinkers on and look at what your own organization is doing. But I think it's really important that we look at cybersecurity across your supply chain as well. And we've seen this last year where we heard about the Moovit breach, which led payroll service provider Zealous and subsequently companies like British Airways and government organizations like Ofcom suffering wide-scale data breaches. So how important is that we look at supply chains, and how can companies learn from this, and what can they actually do about it?
Yeah, the supply chain, it has always been there, you know, as a threat vector. I think that's one thing to say. But I think I think it's really important that when you're looking at your supply chain, you apply or try and apply as best you can the same principles and posture that you can all the way down the supply chain. Now, whether that be through, I don't know, some sort of NIST certification or ISO certification or some sort of common standard that you can apply to your supply chain to say you can only work with this if you have these controls in place, by whatever framework you want to apply to that, then that kind of makes sense to me. But we do see a lot of that sort of horizontal move or from supply chain into some of the bigger organizations, get hold of the credentials, and then next thing you know, you're into the bigger fish. And ultimately that's what these you know, threat actors are looking to. They want to get to the bigger fish, whether that's through, you know, the ability to extract ransomware or cash out because of the ransomware, or extract the data so they can do horrible things with it. I think that they're always looking for that next thing. So of course, when you look at where are you going to start? Well, you're going to start at the easiest point of entry. And quite often that is some of the smaller organizations that we talked earlier about. What they want to do is produce widgets. They've got, you know, a team of 50 people and they produce widgets. They don't have 50 people sit in a security operations center monitoring their IT infrastructure. That's just not the business they're in. So what we've BlackBerry has developed is an MDR service whereby those organizations that, you know, can't and simply can't afford, or they're too small or not sophisticated enough, outsource that to us. So BlackBerry will take on the full responsibility of bringing on board all of the telemetry and doing that, you know, managed detection response service. And I think that's one way that if you look down the supply chain of your organizations, you can say, well, if you're, I know, British Airways, for example, look down our supply chain, what controls are in place? Oh, great. You know, that supplier of widgets here has got a managed detection response service from BlackBerry in place. Great. That gives us some comfort that actually, you know, as an entry point, that's going to be really tough for a hacker to get into because of the BlackBerry service. I think if you look at, that's how you kind of look at it across the supply chain. It's really tough because we live in a global market where supply chains are diverse and global, right? So, but as a, if I was looking at supply chain, it would be what is our easiest point of entry and who is that? And how do we help that organization either upskill or get the right services and security posture in place so that, you know, we can lessen the risk to ourselves.
Very good. I'd like to now look into the future and know a bit more about what's on your radar for the next year or so. What trends are you seeing? What are you keeping a very close eye on? What are you concerned about? What are you excited about when you look at the future?
That's so much. I think the on a personal level, the different applications of AI. The blend between sort of AI and augmented reality, as those two things come together and the capabilities that provides is fascinating to me. I find that the benefits of what that can deliver absolutely intriguing, and I'm really excited about what that's going to produce. From a less exciting cybersecurity perspective, it's more of the same. I think, you know, I think we the threats, techniques, and processes or procedures the threat actors are using, they're not changing particularly. But it what is changing is the pace and the efficacy of what they're putting into the market. So for what the future holds is more of the same, but at a much higher tempo with a much higher efficacy. So, you know, what I mean by that is you're going to get one piece of malware a month. You're probably going to get 10 or 20 or 100 or 1,000 because the advent of AI, the generative AI, means that they're able to work at a much increased speed. And through that sort of in the wild testing, if you like, they're able to get more efficacy. So I think that's in the sort of short to medium term, you know, be prepared for more attacks and for them to be more effective. So definitely make sure that you're accounting for that. But then I think a bit further out is that we talked earlier about polymorphic. So where you're able to just effectively write a piece of code, put it into the wild, and then it self-heals, self-corrects, self-determines. That's the bit that keeps me awake at night, thinking about how do we defend against that? Do we have the right models in place? Do we have the right technology in place to keep our customers safe? Because that is the next thing that is really going to hit organizations is a piece of malware that just keeps propagating, it keeps repairing itself, it keeps coming back, it keeps getting better, and no one's touching it. No one's looking at it. It is just literally doing it itself. And that's the bit that is really worrying for, or should be worrying for organizations, is for me.
Very good. And are you worried about quantum?
I think everyone should be worried about quantum. Yeah. It changes the dynamic completely. You know, quantum is the paradigm is such significant benefits that come with quantum computing. And I'm always glass half full. I always like to see the positives and see the applications of those positive outputs into society. But with those with that becomes obviously the downside of any technology is it can be used for bad things as well. And I think that the quantum is a game changer. You know, when we look at from an identity perspective, what I mean by that is passwords and biometric data and all that sort of stuff. What do they mean in a quantum world? Mm-hmm. You know, because a password is pretty much irrelevant in the quantum world. I can barely remember my, you know, X amount of digit password now. In the quantum world, it would have to be, you know, 20 pages of A4, you know, longer than 10 minutes to break through. So I think it's a real worry. But I think there's a lot of really smart companies and people working on that problem of, you know, as we always have done, we've always found a way to extract the benefits whilst making sure we can protect against the bad stuff that happens. But it is a worry.
Very good. I think this is a great way to end this conversation. And I think the point you've made very clear today is that cybersecurity is one of the top strategic priorities for businesses. It will only become more important for businesses, especially with the very fast evolution of AI that creates completely new threat vectors that organizations need to be aware of. And on the other side, there's amazing technology out there to help companies protect themselves.
100%. Thanks for having me, Ben. It's been great to be here. Thank you.
Pleasure. If anyone wants to find out more, where do they go?
BlackBerry.com. Yeah. Or find me on LinkedIn. Very happy to help anybody.
Amazing. Thank you so much for your time, Kieran.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.